Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Free Association. It's early morning, but I've got a video to play. Peter Stefanovic has been, to his credit, has been hammering on about Boris Johnson's lies and about government lies for months now. And the video I'm going to play is about universal credit, but there are others about Boris Johnson. So this is Peter Stefanovic.
To unite the union, 660,000 key workers will have a negative impact on their bank balance as a result of this. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation says 500,000 more people being pulled into poverty, including 200,000 children. Citizens Advice are warning that a third of people on universal credit will end up in debt when the extra payment is removed. All of those taken together, and you tell me that you personally are happy to see this go.
Well, if I think about the £20 a week, that's just about 2 hours of national minimum wage.
Completely untrue, and the Work and Pensions Secretary knows it. The minimum wage for over 23s is only £8.91, not £10 an hour. And the Pensions Secretary couldn't wait to jump across to BBC Breakfast to repeat it.
But I'm conscious that, you know, £20 a week is about 2 hours extra work every week. We'll be seeing what we can do to help people perhaps secure those extra hours.
Well, let's break that down.
But I'm conscious that, you know, £20 a week is about 2 hours extra work.
Complete bollocks. And as for this,
we'll be seeing what we can do to help people perhaps secure those extra hours.
Just more bollocks. The Work and Pensions Secretary is saying universal credit claimants can make up for the cut by working 2 extra hours a week. That's completely wrong, as claimants would need more than 6 hours extra work to make up for the cut. As Work and Pensions Secretary, she must know that. Every pound workers earn while on universal credit triggers a 63 pence reduction in their benefits if they're earning more than a £293 a month threshold. That means many minimum wage claimants only gain about £3.30 for each extra hour they work. And that's before any national insurance, which has just seen a massive hike, income tax and pension contributions are deducted. The Department for Work and Pensions says it's still not produced a formal impact assessment of the cut, even though a government official told the Financial Times the internal modelling of ending the universal credit uplift is catastrophic. So it appears the only way the government can now justify this cut is by lying to the public.
So that's pretty direct. He's normally fairly direct. I'll see if I can find one of the Boris Johnson videos and play that as well. It should be on his channel.
From next April, we will create a new UK-wide 1.25% health and social care levy on earned income hypothecated in law to health and social care, with dividend rates increasing by the same amount.
Boris Johnson today confirming a tax rise for millions of British workers. But this was his guarantee to voters in 2019.
And I can tell you this, we can do all of this as One Nation Conservatives whilst not putting up your taxes. And that's why in our manifesto, it's very clear. Saj, I'm glad to say, is nodding beside me. He knows how to do it. We will not put up income tax, VAT or national insurance contributions.
In fact, he went further, telling workers they would actually pay less tax under his government.
We're going to be cutting national insurance up to 12,000.
In 2019, the Prime Minister stood on the steps of Downing Street and said this.
I am announcing now on the steps of Downing Street that we will fix the crisis in social care once and for all with a clear plan we have prepared.
No detail was given, but as he said, his government had a clear plan to fix social care. Presumably, he knew at the time how it was to be funded. and it most definitely did not involve increasing taxes for workers.
We will not put up income tax, VAT or national insurance contributions.
Today, he confirmed national insurance contributions will rise 1.25% for both employers and employees in April 2022. It will see the average worker pay an extra £255 a year. NHS staff will now be paying for their own promised pay rise, which was already a real terms pay cut.
There you go. So he's doing a good job, Peter Stefanovic. We need more people like him, I think. He's, see what else we've got on here.
Are we ignoring the science around coronavirus and how to treat it? With a CEO of a salad bar chain hitting the headlines because of his comments around healthy eating being interpreted as fat shaming, let's have a look at the conversation around coronavirus and its treatments and whether or not we're being rational with regard to this peculiar issue from wherever you look at it on the spectrum of ideas. This is one of those videos where it's necessary for me to declare that I'm not offering any advice or suggestions or even opinions around the treatment of COVID, just measuring and judging the conversation that takes place around it and whether or not it's helpful, candid and transparent. The CEO of salad chain Sweetgreen is facing accusations of fat phobia after claimed in a since deleted LinkedIn post that COVID is linked to obesity. He said 78% of hospitalizations due to COVID are obese and overweight people. Is there an underlying problem that perhaps we've not given enough attention to? Naaman wrote in the post saying no vaccine nor mask will save us and proposing taxes on processed food and refined sugar. I mean, I suppose it's a bit more cynical because he does run Sweetgreen, a pun based on the idea of vegetables and salads, but also money. So of course he's got the skin in the game or no skin in the game if it's vegan or vegetarian. But by making the observation that many people that have been hospitalized with coronavirus that I think is factually accurate. And furthermore, I sometimes personally feel that we should have a more holistic attitude towards health, that if we eat healthy and if we exercise, it's likely that our health will improve in all sorts of areas, not just with regard to this pandemic, but across the board. I'm minded of Kip Anderson's film Fork Over Knives, or one of the ones about become a vegan now, otherwise I'm just going to nag you into a grave, and I am a vegan, so leave me the hell alone. Like, in one of those, he talked about how the Diabetes Advisory Committee, the Cardiovascular Advisory Committee, the Cancer Advisory Committee, all accepted funding from processed food industries. So you can see that the part of the problem around this pandemic is health in general. That's not a criticism of any proposed measures to prevent, curb or control COVID. It's simply a fact that we ought to be healthy. Neither is it fat shaming. People are allowed to have whatever kind of bodies they want to have, whatever tastes people have, whatever regard, you know. But what I suppose I am biased by my own experience of addiction and my own relationship with food. Well, I recognize that me personally, speaking only for myself, I used to eat quite a lot for comfort. And I feel like because of the availability of high sugar, high fat foods, and because of the gorgeous, delightful pleasure in eating those foods, if you have an addictive temperament or if you're trying to resolve emotional issues, I can see how there would be a connection. And additionally, I can see that having a strong cardiovascular system, a good respiratory system, access to good nutrition would obviously all be beneficial. That to me doesn't seem like a political statement. Of course, the messenger issue is significant. This dude's a CEO of a salad company, and obviously it seems that one of his priorities is selling a whole bunch of salads to people. But to claim that what he's saying is untrue or fat shaming, I think is a little unfair. Naaman also said that COVID is here to stay for the foreseeable future, and the best bet is to focus on overall health instead of just preventing infection. I don't want to walk into the firestorm that he's walked into, but they seem like reasonable observations to me. I would never shame someone on the basis of their appearance, because it would contravene my strongly felt principle of kindness. Talking about different ways of handling this extraordinary political situation, because let's face it, it's a political as well as medical conversation. That, for me, is a big part of the problem here, is we're unable to have normal, fact-based conversations. Do these treatment works? Is there a problem around this? Are there anomalies here? Should we be presenting this information? Is it safe and healthy to do these things for people in this age group? Should we be prioritising this? What are the other consequences of lockdown? What is the nature of AIDS? There's so many conversations that are not being had, because peculiarly, this issue has become politicised. Now, I don't think that's helpful or right. When it comes to something like finding a solution for an unusual situation, it's necessary to reconsider emotion, but not be governed by emotion when making calculated decisions. Otherwise, it feels like we're in an agenda-led scenario. No mask or vaccine will save us. In full disclosure, I am vaccinated and support others getting vaccinated. Well, it's good, isn't it, that he said that, in so much as what that suggests is he is fully open and doesn't have a particularly prejudicial position around that aspect of the conversation. And yet still he has been met with the ire of people that have a somewhat fundamentalist approach to this. I feel that something happened around, you know, a precursor to Trump and Brexit, stuff that's kind of covered in that, you know, Social Dilemma documentary, living in this sort of ongoing cyber maelstrom with people just flinging opinions and abuse at each other. If the criticism of our man, Naaman there, is that he's fat-shaming, then surely the reason you think fat-shaming is wrong is because it's not kind. And if that's because you believe kindness is a good thing, don't you think that you should be kind as well? I really find that a peculiar aspect of modern cultural life. People judge people for stuff while sort of simultaneously doing the thing that they're judging. Hey, never make people feel that they're not good enough, insecure or inadequate. Because what it looks like to me is some people just enjoy expressing rage and venting venom and like living at that kind of frequency, expressing their dissatisfaction through the apparently consequence-free discourse that takes place online, but it isn't consequence-free. People are affected by it. Most importantly of all, we're creating a kind of a pervasive sense of disease among people, whether it's regard to this issue or any other. If we lose our geniality, our conviviality, if we start treating one another with contempt, what are we trying to save? What are we fighting for? If we're all contemptuous of people because they've got different opinions to us, well, the argument's lost already. What if we made the food that is making us sick illegal? What if we taxed processed food and refined sugar to pay for the impact of the pandemic? These are all actually quite good ideas. I like this bloke. We've been quick to put in place mask and vaccine mandates, but zero conversation on health mandates, continued the CEO. All the while, we've printed unlimited money to soften the blow the shutdowns have caused to our country. He's really going for it, isn't he? It's a bit like when Jerry Maguire wrote that memo. He's sort of gone, he's just woke up. I've had enough of this pandemic. And what about if we did that? And shouldn't children, no matter the colour of their skin or their culture, and what the hell's going on in Afghanistan? He's woke up as me, this geezer. What if we focused? On he goes, still typing, like it's 3 a.m. now. What if we focused on the root cause and used this pandemic as a catalyst for creating a healthier future, he continued. We clearly have no problem with government overreach on how we live our lives all in the name of health. However, we are creating more problems than we're solving. In response to a commentator calling the post fatphobic, Naaman said that was not his intention. He said the post was meant to start a conversation about how we should think about health differently and attack the root causes. Okay, so let's acknowledge that we're in a contentious area and it's a subject where people seemingly are actively looking to find conflict, find fault and create conflagration. But let's look at some facts and statistics on the subject and then you decide what you feel and I'll decide what I feel and we'll get through life together. A poll states that the majority of adults, 61%, experienced undesired weight changes since the pandemic started. Speaking personally, I put on 10K. I'm trying to lose the bloody thing. 40 42% reported they gained more weight than they intended. Yep, I'm in that. Of those, they gained an average of 29 pounds. Yep. This is me. I'm the salad guy. I'm the person in the statistics. Am I alone in the universe just doing this at myself? Such changes come with significant health risks, including higher vulnerability to serious illness from the coronavirus. Adults also reported increased alcohol consumption. Nearly one in four adults reported drinking more alcohol to cope with their stress. I suppose being objective, being open, conversing critically about these subjects means we need to include all of the consequences, economical, medical, psychological, addiction. We need to look at all of the consequences of the pandemic and the way that the pandemic is being treated and handled. We shouldn't be afraid of that. Why has everything become so intense? The CDC says obesity may triple the risk of severe COVID. So there you go, it's the CDC. I mean, old salad bar fella has jumped on it, but it's just some stats. There are other comorbidities that can cause severe outcomes. The main risk factors include hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and coronary artery disease. All of those comorbidities are related to excess weight, and we might assume, generally speaking, diet. And a cynical person might say that the kind of food we eat is the kind of food that's promoted, and the kind of food that's promoted is the kind of food that's profitable. And the problems that we face in this world is that everything is a subset of, you might call it advanced late capitalism. So science is a subset of advanced late capitalism. So that means you don't have objective science, you have science divided by the advanced late capitalist models. You don't have true nutritional data available. You have nutritional data and food industry divided by or multiplied by the requirements of advanced capitalism. There is no objectivity when you live within the framework of a financially incentivized set of ideals. So transparency at the level of public discourse is one of the earliest requirements. Meanwhile, in my country where I live, the UK, 650,000 people aged between 18 and 34 started smoking the old fags. 32% of people aged 50 to 70 started drinking more. The UK government is cooperating with major food delivery companies such as Uber and Deliveroo to offer discounted fast food to young people who get vaccinated against COVID. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. Like when Krispy Kremes were giving out donuts with vaccinations. If you strongly believe that the evidence suggests that vaccines is a part of the solution to this problem, then simply tell people the truth about it and let people make their own decisions. Transparently communicate information. Don't say we'll give you a chocolate bar. And when Deliveroo and Just Eats and all them companies are delivering food, I see some advert on the telly saying we're delivering stuff for 99p to your house. How's that going to work out, paying that driver? What's going on? This is not economically viable. You're creating economic situations that this is a wasteland. It's unawakened. It's foolish. This is a time for a wake-up. So I suppose what this is an appeal to, really, is that this is not me supporting the salad bar owner dude. This is me saying, can we speak openly and honestly about this topic? Can we communicate clearly, without fear of reprisals? Is it possible to hear an opinion you don't agree with without hating that person? What's happening to us? The problem of coronavirus is small compared to the problem of the framework that we are discovering holds it. A framework of disdain, contempt, and conflict. As long as we forget fundamental basic values, kindness, open communication, tolerance, if we forget those things, there is no society worth saving, no matter what you believe. If you enjoyed this video, comment below. If you didn't enjoy it, I mean, based on what I just...
All right, that's Russell Brand, who I don't always agree with, but that made a lot of sense. And he's quite annoying, but he likes to talk. He's got opinions about everything under the sun, really. And he likes to talk about his opinions. So he's a good man to have around for a radio show, I suppose. And I'll probably use a bit more Russell Brand in the near future, just because I quite enjoyed what he had to say. Let's have a bit of music or something. Let's keep me awake and keep me interested.